Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're going to meet two more of the remarkable and inspirational thought leaders at the forefront of innovation that UBS supports and celebrates through its Global Visionaries programme. Today, we're meeting Rodrigo Garcia Gonzalez and Pierre Paslier of Notplat. Notplat is a sustainable startup whose mission is to eliminate waste and tackle plastic pollution by developing packaging solutions that disappear naturally after use. Notplat is made from one of nature's finest renewable resources, brown seaweed. This grows up to 1 meter per day, doesn't compete with food crops, doesn't need fresh water or fertilizers, and actively contributes to de-acidifying the world's oceans. Rodrigo and Pierre, it's a pleasure to welcome you both to the programme. Thanks for being with us. Let's start, if we can, right at the beginning of this journey. Tell us a bit about how this vision came about. Remind us about the origin stories, what you were both doing, and how you managed to start out on this journey together.
Sure. So we have different backgrounds. Pierre was working before, well, he's an engineer. He was working before as a packaging engineer in L'Oreal, making a lot of shampoo bottles. And from my side, I was an architect working a lot with plastic waste. So I suppose two different ends of the spectrum. And we met in London, studying a master in innovation design engineering. And we were looking for solutions in terms of how to package water without using plastic. And there is where we started to experiment with different type of materials and hydrocolloids. And we end up with this first prototype that we call it O, because it was the name that people were giving it when they were seeing it for the first time. They were saying like, oh, and that was the name from the beginning. That basically is a membrane made of seaweed that can encapsulate liquids and is biodegradable, is quite simple, and sometimes, or most of the times, you can eat it.
It's a truly astonishing product, and I love the fact that that's the naming convention, that's where it came from, which makes perfect sense to me. One thing that struck me as interesting before we talk more about the products was exactly this idea about trying to get people to do labels. And I know that reading about you guys on your site and all your colleagues, you talk about the fact that it is hard to define what you do because it's not been done before. And I just wonder, how do you manage your concern or nervousness as someone who's running a business that you are almost by definition taking unprecedented steps every step that you do take?
Yeah, I think it requires this kind of open-mindedness to the challenges that we face. We try to have a very multicultural and multidisciplinary team so that we approach the problems from a very new perspective rather than kind of like looking at the state of the art of everything that's been done before. But it's true that it's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. And I think that one of the things that always kind of like shocks me thinking about plastic is that plastic has benefited from 80 years of free R&D from all around the world, universities, companies. So we are using a material that has like so much money and so much brain time that has been developed to make it so efficient. And thinking about how much we could do with natural materials if we just spend a quarter of that kind of like intention and that those resources on seaweed or natural materials, we could do truly incredible things with the materials.
Well, to that point then, why has there not been more movement faster from other stakeholders? Because as you point out, this is something that is a genuinely viable alternative. It's sustainable, it's abundant, it grows quickly. And as you say, it has a very short shelf life in terms of how quickly it biodegrades. So why the resistance? Is it one of these problems where there simply isn't the investment in the solution? And I mean investment in every sense of the word, from enough of those stakeholders that you're alluding to?
I think that it's definitely a combination of factors. First of all, I think that people have truly had an emotional response with plastic pollution only for a few years. I think that like if you look at the big kind of like clean tech areas of focus 5 years ago, plastic was not really high on the list. And thanks to Blue Planet and a number of kind of like media outlets focusing on the issue and people being a lot more vocal about the problem, I think that it's really enabled companies to realize that they can't just keep on doing it the way we've been doing it for 80 years. We've got to change, we've got to adapt. So I think that it required, that amount of care from everyone on that issue so that people are ready to change the way they do things.
And just remind people, you've mentioned a couple of examples there, of course, but the scale of the problem, I think it is important, isn't it, to sort of go back over that, because people talk now about, oh, yes, we understand the perils of ocean plastics, or we understand we need to move on. But I wonder how granular people's understanding is of the true scale of the problem, of the real numbers, because they're pretty astonishing, aren't they?
Yeah, I think actually the numbers become meaningless very quickly. But one thing that is kind of scary is the fact that plastic doesn't degrade. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller bits until it creates microplastics. And now we know and we found that like it ends up everywhere in the environment. It's in the ocean, of course, but it's in the food chain, it's in rain, it's in the air, it's everything. So all that plastic that we've been using for the past few decades, it's broken down into everywhere. And I think that like we really have created a bigger mess than we can deal with if we continue down that path. So it's time to really rethink the materials we want to use so that we have something that nature can deal with and that we can deal with as humans.
But in terms of number, well, it's not a number, but like this this quote from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation that there's going to be more plastic than fish in the ocean by 2050, I think that's quite scary as well.
It's definitely quite scary. I think that's an understatement, isn't it? Let's look in a bit more detail then at the product. Can you take us back to, I don't know, was it a moment? Was there a eureka moment when you understood that you could effectively harness these materials and some of these processes, and by being innovative, you could then create something that genuinely worked? Or was it often, like so many of the most brilliant inventions, something that just took an unbelievable amount of commitment and belief and failures and successes to get to? Was there a single moment, or was it this kind of a cumulative accomplishment?
I think a bit of both. I think right at the beginning, what we did, we didn't plan to have a company. It was just a project. And we share the recipe of how to make ojos right at the beginning as Creative Commons online. So we made a video that quite quickly got quite high numbers in terms of visibility in YouTube. And a lot of people started to replicate it at home, which it was quite astonishing in terms of how much people were receptive around this concept and give us a lot of knowledge as well in terms of how to improve the recipe. And that was a bit the initial push for us to try to think, oh, there might be something else than just a project here. And maybe it's as well our responsibility or our opportunity to push it a bit farther than what an individual can do and try to look into industrialization and how we can have a real impact. And since then, I suppose, had been a bit of a cumulative achievements almost day by day, not only by us, but like the incredible team that we have and all the partners that work with us to go almost bottle by bottle or sachet by sachet, replacing them. So every single event that we do or every single sachet that we replace, I think it signifies for us one step farther.
Exactly. And even those long journeys start with a single step. That's the old Buddhist mantra, of course, isn't it? It's really interesting that you both cite collaboration and cooperation, and the idea of using Creative Commons at the start is really important. And so many of the global visionaries that we have spoken to really put collaboration and cooperation right at the top of their lists of what you need, you know, the key recipe for success. Clearly, you guys are enjoying that with your backers and with the people that you work with. Do you feel that you're getting support and engagement from other stakeholders, whether they're nation states, governments, you know, people who are also able to really reshape this space? Are they getting carried along at a fast enough pace for your liking?
I think that it's been a very exciting past few years of more and more people jumping in on the issue and trying to really do their bit. You can always look at some neighbor country who is doing a little bit better of this, or some company that is making a bigger statement. But I think that we're quite excited to see that overall the world is going towards a significant change of behavior. So we're really kind of like glad that this is the case. And I think that one of the things that has been really interesting lately is that actually company CEOs and hopefully in government it's going to be the same, but like all of these decision makers, they are asking people to call them out on this issue. And I think that it really works. So every time someone is kind of like shaming a brand on Instagram or like saying, oh, I wish there was an alternative to this, or just kind of like deciding to buy an alternative option rather than like something that is like fully wrapped in plastic, it really goes a long way. And I think that this is what enables all of the stakeholders to realize the scale of the problem and to change and to kind of like get on this journey. So all of these little actions and comments and push, they really add up, and it really is driving a lot of change.
Well, I just wonder on that point, the scale of the problem then is clear. What about the scale potentially of the solution? How do you guys see the potential scope, I guess, not just of what NotPlat and what you guys are doing, but for these kinds of technologies to address this giant project? And you know, the stat you gave about, you know, more plastic than fish by 2050, you know, these are terrifying numbers and terrifying notions. Are the applications of this sufficiently vast that it can rise to meet even a challenge on that scale?
Yeah, so we try to think that there is not a single solution for this problem that you have to tackle from a different point of view. Is really similar to how, for example, nature packages things. They don't use one single solution. If you think on fruit, for example, there is quite a lot of different skins. So we are that belief that like every different content or every different context should have a different approach. So taking that in consideration in terms of scaling or sell, so we have three lines of products. One is OHO, the one that we mentioned that is for edible liquids. We have been using it in things like the London Marathon, where we distributed 46,000 units to all the runners, or doing things with companies like Just Eat to deliver in sachets of ketchup to the restaurants. So we are working on that. We opt as well for an option of going quite local in terms of manufacturing. So as well, because at the moment, plastic packaging, you need a really huge investment to have a line of blowing bottles, for example. But you don't need a super big investment to have a small line of making ojos. So I think that represents an advantage in terms of how we can scale up. At the same time, it's a change of paradigm in terms of like what the current industry use. So that on one side. We have two other lines of products that I suppose they are a bit easier to scale in terms of what is the currently out there. We are working on coatings. So that means for coffee cups or salad trays at the moment, they have films of plastic on top of them in order to make it waterproof. So we are using seaweed as well in order to make that property. And that's a bit easier to scale up because there is quite a lot of that industry already and it's a direct replacement of material. And in other hands, now we are making quite a lot of films. So rolls of films that you can use for making the small sachets, for hardware or for food applications. And we are trying to as well look at the problem in terms of not only how we can replace plastic, but what else we could add. So some of our sachets, for example, they could be soluble. So what that means is that you can add functionality into it. For example, we have a pasta sachet that you can put the pasta in the pot together with the sachet, and the sachet will add some flavor to the pasta. It will already have the salt and some of the flavor that the pasta will use. So trying to as well to see, to approach the problem not in terms of just replacement of a material, but what else we could add that plastic can't.
And just tell us a little bit about scalability and how you've retained this idea of sharing these technologies and sharing these innovations more broadly, because you have machines. Is that, am I right in thinking that you could sort of effectively kind of franchise out around the world so people can quite literally buy into the vision? Is it very important that it retains this accessibility scalability, shareability? Is it important that you keep a handle on this idea that this is a technology that must, if it is to ultimately be successful, be shareable and easy to get out there and get around the world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are a packaging company, so we always need to collaborate with different partners. So we are a B2B, B2C company to that extent. So we want to be a bit of an ingredient brand like Gore-Tex or Lycra or Intel that adds some value to other partners or other companies. And we try to be accessible enough to be able to work with a wide range of sizes of companies. So we have done collaborations with big companies like, I don't know, Unilever or PepsiCo, where we did for them the tennis tournament of Roland Garros with 10,000 small sachets of Tropicana juice. But we have done things as well with really small early on startups. And for us, it's really crucial that everyone have access to this technology on doesn't matter on which scale.
Tell me one thing that I find interesting, and I know I think you both mentioned this earlier, the fact that these sachets in particular are edible. Is there an interesting moment when people, I don't know, almost can't believe that that's the case, and you have to sort of say, no, go on. That must be kind of a fun sort of corollary of what you do. Is there still that moment where people kind of can't quite believe the properties of the products that you guys have developed?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, it's quite funny how sometimes people say, and I can eat the plastic. And then you have to say, no, it's not plastic. And that's kind of where the name comes from, NotPla. But it's true that there is a set of preconception around packaging, that it should be this thing that is almost immediately a waste, that is like completely worthless, and that the only thing that has value is the content. And I think that we can break away from this very commoditized definition of packaging towards something where actually the packaging is something that is like offering something that is new, that like could be quite fun. We've been filling some of our ohos with cocktails, so it's quite fun when you have an espresso martini or a tequila sunrise and you can like pop the whole thing in your mouth. So I think that, yeah, it really kind of like, it's an interesting reaction on people's face when they understand that they can eat it.
Just maybe if we look to the future, perhaps finally, guys, what are your ambitions? And is it important, because you both talk so eloquently and elegantly about not just the scale of the challenge, but your enthusiasm and the excitement clearly that you and your team have at tackling these problems every day. How do you sort of prioritize how to try and deliver to your ambitions and to keep a process going that you can stick to, because you're clearly so hungry to keep things moving? What does the sort of medium term look like, and how do you kind of make sense of the next steps that you have to take?
Yeah, so I think that you got us. We're definitely quite excited about the potential of seaweed to really change the game in terms of packaging. The thing that I think drives us and like filters our thoughts is the mission of the company to make packaging disappear. So we really focus on areas where we think that we can really use a material that is going to serve that functionality of never having packaging that is going to be a way like a pollution on the environment that is going to stay there for very long. And in that sense, what we are focusing on in the short, medium term is to really finalize the industrialization of these different products that we've created so that we can start really producing them in large enough quantities to really see the impact on plastic. We really want to see like that curve of plastic production going down and feel that part of it is due to those alternatives being out there. So I think that you can expect NotPla to have a growing portfolio of solutions. We want to help all the companies that package things with plastic to package it with something else. And I think that, with seaweed, we have something that we know is extremely renewable, completely naturally biodegradable, and in some cases, even edible.
Pierre Paslier, and before that, Rodrigo Garcia, founders of NotPla. Thank you for being on the programme. An absolute delight to speak with you. That brings us to the end of this special edition of The Bulletin with UBS here on Monocle 24. You can find out more about the work of Pierre and Rodrigo and all their colleagues and partners in NotPla. Just visit notpla.com. And for more about all the global visionaries in the UBS programme, head to ubs.com and search Global Visionaries. In the meantime, you can listen again to this and every episode, including our archive of other brilliant visionary characters at monocle.com and on all good podcast platforms. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.